Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, December 23rd, 2019. The president of South Sudan and Riek Machar meet again but do not resolve the key issues. And there is demand by some for even more states. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar today wrapped up 2 weeks of meetings in Juba without breaking the deadlock on outstanding issues, including the number of states and their boundaries. President Kiir's security adviser says the two recommitted themselves, however, to breaking the logjam on contentious issues, but announced no breakthroughs. Kiir and Machar met off and on in the South Sudanese capital for the past 2 weeks to try to resolve outstanding issues before the latest transitional period expires in February. The period to settle those issues before forming a unity government has been extended twice now. Speaking in Arabic, Tatku Gatwak, President Kiir's security adviser, told journalists today that Machar is expected to return to Khartoum on Tuesday and then come back to Juba for more meetings after the holidays.
We have also agreed to continue discussing files of the outstanding issues. I am here in my capacity as an envoy from President and Riek Machar to deliver best of regards and peace wishes to all citizens of South Sudan.
General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, a member of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, attended those meetings as one of the peace deal's guarantors. Machar was accompanied by Dagalo when he arrived 2 weeks ago from Khartoum. Kiir and Machar were expected to resolve the bigger outstanding issues during their face-to-face meetings. While they did not agree on the number of states or their boundaries, the two said they would ensure that all security arrangements are completed on time. Tutku says Kiir and Machar reaffirmed their commitment to silencing the guns as well.
We want to assure our people that the new year will not witness any war in South Sudan, and our people should celebrate in peace. Now South Sudan is stable, peaceful, and secure. This is an assurance from our top leaders who are also working for peace.
Speaking in Arabic as he stood alongside Machar and Dagalo to face reporters following their meeting today, which lasted a little over an hour, Kiir said he and Machar agreed to form the unity government when the extended pre-transitional period expires, regardless of whether the outstanding issues are resolved by then.
We and the guarantor have said after the 100 days, we have to form the government. And if there are other things not done, we will task that government because that is a unity government. We will task it with the things that are not completed and implement them.
Kiir and Machar are expected to resume face-to-face talks in Juba next month to finally determine the country's number of states and their boundaries, among other things. The SPLM-IO posted a tweet recently saying Machar and Kiir's meeting on the number of states and boundaries mediated by David Mabuza, the deputy president of South Africa, has been postponed until the first week of January. Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report from Juba. A member of parliament representing Patchala County in the Transitional Legislative Assembly says President Kiir should issue a decree declaring that Patchala is a state. Munira Abdelwahaf says Patchala County is marginalized and its residents are facing enormous challenges, including a lack of development, schools, hospitals, early marriages, and child abductions. She says the county has unique historical kingdoms and it deserves a self-rule. My colleague John Tanza traveled to Patchala on the South Sudan-Ethiopian border this week to witness the conditions of the residents in that town.
We have 20 kings. So each area have its own kings. They were called. The big king is not here. He's in America now. He's not feeling well. He had a heart problem. So he went to state. But his brothers and his cousins, they came to the president. And they raised this problem. They raised the problem of child abduction. They raised the road. there is the telecommunication. We don't have. How can you talk to the people? They have to go to Addis, to Gambela, by the way, so then we can communicate with them. The hospital, you talked about it, people are putting the bike to go to Gambela, to Ponyewudo, but bike. If he's wounded, if he is going to have a heart problem, if he's going for a labor, difficult labor because she's an underage, some of them died on the way.
Why would you need a state when the current Buma state is not delivering services to its residents? What is the guarantee that a new state will deliver services to its people?
As long as everybody is asking the state, so that the service will come so near to you. As Dr. John Garang said, you take the town, but we need it. We need the service. If that can bring services to the people, why not? Why are we not getting it? They have some people, the population is not high, but they got the state. But for Fashala, it's a rich area, as you saw it with your eyes. We have resources in that area. What we need a place that we can govern ourselves.
How would you govern yourself in a new state, given their economic situation in South Sudan?
So for me, I will add my voice on my people who are crying, because why did they ask for the state? It's just because the service. And also for the security. If your child is being abducted and you cannot locate your child cannot come back. We have 125, that's what I know, I don't know more, maybe there would be more, children being abducted and have not come back. For example, you went to that area, you saw a child which is 13 years old having a baby. Why? Because we don't have schools. Awareness, no road. How can we reach our people? We reach them through the planes. If it's no airplane, you cannot go there. And it's very expensive. Imagine.
And how would the situation improve if you're given a new state?
Fashala never been like this. Never been like the way I saw it yesterday. People also are scared of their children. Sometimes they come and kidnap the child inside the town. Somebody asked me why it's so green and people don't cultivate. How do you cultivate when you are carrying a small child behind you? Somebody will come and grab your child in the bush there. Who will get you? There's no road that those people who are ambushing or stealing the children or doing all these things to be caught straight away. We don't have enough police there. You saw when we were flying up. The office of police is there far away.
Honorable Munira, I have visited Fashala town and I witnessed the conditions of the residents of the town. Why do you want Fashala to break away from Buma state?
I want that area to raise up and to be like other areas in South Sudan. I'm not talking in my areas alone, but in South Sudan. They have areas, a lot of areas who look like Fashala, by the way. We are seeing Juba, we are seeing only the capital. But if you go deep, 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 you will see how women of South Sudan are suffering. And they wanted to reach out there. And they want an education today before tomorrow. So then they can also contribute in the building of this country.
That is Munira Abdelwahab, a member of the National Assembly representing Pachal County in Boma State. She was speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Juba over the weekend. About 10,000 southern Sudanese, including armed rebels, mostly of the Toposa tribe, have reportedly crossed into Ethiopia in recent days, about 200 kilometers over the border. That's according to the local zonal administrator, Faso Sapio, who says the refugees are outnumbering the locals and, in fact, displacing some residents. The local official who spoke to a VOA reporter in the area also says, quote, "There is great concern for public safety that some of the refugees are armed," end quote. The refugees are from the greater Kapeta region in eastern Equatoria State, bordering Kenya and Ethiopia. The Ethiopian government and the UNHCR representative in that country have not commented on the influx of South Sudanese refugees. A representative for Refugee and Returnee Affairs in Ethiopia says they are not aware of the situation and would not speak on the record to VOA. Ethiopian officials have said there are already more than 300,000 South Sudanese refugees in Ethiopia. There is mixed reaction in Juba after the government recently launched a program for a renewal of license plate numbers that was for cars and trucks in South Sudan. A police official says the new SSD series plates will help them keep records and reduce car thefts. But citizens and activists disagree. They are urging the government to be consistent with implementing the law. Onan Walter Solomon has the details from Juba.
Major General Daniel Justin, the spokesperson of South Sudan's National Police Service, says three companies, Trinity Energy, Warren Deet, and Ismail Group of Companies, were contracted to make new plate numbers with state logos and security features. Justin says the new features could help police keep track of records and make it easier for policemen to trace car thieves.
When you report this to the police, we will just from the number plate identify the owner, and then when we make our search, it will be very specific. We will be looking for such number plate. But currently, sometimes when you got your number plate from a state, it will take us a lot of time, because when we get into our database, it's not there.
The new plates will also have one big change, according to Justin.
The new number plates is actually having the logos of the states. So this will help us to identify the number plates belongs to which state. The other one was generally, it was only South Sudan. And then here in the database, we will know which state have taken which numbers and so on.
Not everybody is enthusiastic about that, including Solomon Labok, who runs a clinic in Jebel Kujur. He says he is okay with including the state logo on the new plates, but warns doing so could create unintentional consequences, like escalating division.
I don't think there's need of, like, again, putting other logos to differentiate you. We are all in one nation. We all belong to South Sudan. We're all South Sudanese. And when they do this, it means they are going to encourage discrimination by tribe or by states where you come from. You know, we all think differently.
Justin did not say how much the new plates will cost drivers, adding that traffic police headquarters have the exact cost. He says there is no deadline to update vehicle tags, and car owners won't be fined if they decline to have their number plates updated. He thinks that the updated security features will encourage drivers to get new tags.
When you are renewing your license, this is where we'll give you a new number plate with the new security features and indicating the states and so on. You see, because this, due to some experience we had, sometimes you get a number plate is not in our database. In case of a car being stolen, when we look for it in our database, it's not there. But now it will be controlled.
Juba motorist John Bosco says the renewal of number plates is expensive, confusing, and too frequent. Speaking in Arabic, Bosco says if he decides to get new plates, it will be the third year in a row he has had to change his plate number.
We are now tired. There is no money. In 2017, I paid 8,500 South Sudanese pounds for number plate. In 2018, I paid 15,000 South Sudanese pounds for another number plate and expired. And this year in April, I paid 15,000 for a new number plate. Now, again, if we are required to renew number plate, then I will have to renew mine before it is expired. This means the authority will remove my plate before it expires.
Labok says he is concerned with how traffic police will react to the new changes. Rajab Mohandis, the executive director of the Organization for Responsive Governance, says the changes have to be constitutional, stable and predictable.
We just introduced the SSD number plate the other year.
And now we have the new one. And we are very sure next year they will introduce new one and block this one before it reaches out to the rest of the country. So I would say that we are beginning not to take them
very serious. Because of this, they are not very stable.
Mohandis says the new plates are not consistent with regulations, but Justin insists the new changes are consistent with the law. He says the General Directorate of the Central Directorate of Traffic Police will have a database of all the number plates in the country. In December 2016, new number plates bearing SSD series increased in South Sudan. In November 2017, the government launched SSD number plates, which came into effect in December 2017. But disagreements emerged between Jubek State and the national government over who should have issuing authority over SSD number plates. Jubek MPs said implementing the new SSD number plates was unconstitutional. Authorities eventually decided to have each state issue their own number plates. For VOA News, I am Monen Walter Solomon in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese families who lost loved ones in the recent crackdown are demanding justice. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite holiday and why?
Christmas holiday. Christmas. I go home, interact with my family, people. That is the time we can get together with other people.
My favorite holiday is Eid Day, the celebrations, because we get to meet as in our family members. Most of them stay at home that day so that we enjoy all along.
My favorite holiday is the Independence Day. It's my favorite holiday because we celebrate with friends, family, we go out, we visit interesting tourist sites.
My favorite holiday is 1st May. It's workers' holiday. And it's my favorite because that day my school closes and my teachers get to not come to school and I also get to rest well.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. With the one-year anniversary since the beginning of Sudan's revolution that led to the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir, families of victims are reiterating their call on the transitional government to ensure that their loved ones who were killed or injured during the Sudan military's crackdown receive justice. They say the perpetrators must be arrested and put on trial to answer for their crimes. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese marked the first anniversary of their revolution, characterized by the nationwide protests last Thursday. Security forces killed at least 120 protesters and injured more than 400 other Sudanese. Hundreds went missing. Mazin Abdulwahab Saleh says his younger brother, 20-year-old Saleh Abdulwahab Saleh, died during the protests when security forces shot him twice in the back on January 9th in the Omdurman area. Abdul Wahab Saleh tells South Sudan in Focus his family is still traumatized by the brother's death and wants justice.
I can't even imagine, like, he's far away from us. Like, every time I look in his pictures, like, just reminds us, like, I don't know. It's just hard for us, for everybody. I don't know. It's just hard. It's not easy. It's not easy for us, especially for me. Like, I've been away for a long, long time, and I left him here when he was a little baby.
Abdul Wahab Saleh says the families of the victims will never forget the brutality of the previous regime against young people who were killed for demanding their constitutional rights. He says all families that lost loved ones are demanding that justice prevail.
All those families, they needed justice first. And this is what the government should do. Get justice for the people got killed and got shot. People got thrown on the river. This is the first thing they needed, justice. Then Sudan can start growing up.
Zainab Abdin is an older sister to 23-year-old Osman Abdin, who was killed on June 3rd during the military's crackdown on protesters taking part in the mass sit-in outside military headquarters in Khartoum. Speaking in Arabic, Abdin says she was devastated to lose a very supportive brother. She says after her brother's killing, her sick father developed more health complications.
During his last days, he used to help me wash clothes for our sick daddy. And he was really worried for us. And during his last days, he was so close to me and we used to go to the seat inside together. We carry food, water for our Ramadan fasting.
Muhammad Al-Hassan Tabidi is an uncle to the late Ahmed Ibrahim Tabidi, an electrical engineer. He says Sudanese forces killed his nephew in Khartoum's Kalakla neighborhood in April. Tabidi says Ahmed, his parents' only son, and his family were preparing for his wedding early next year.
Hamadok is a part of us. We are part of him. All of us, we are have to be together against this regime. Because this regime like a cancer in a country. It can be vanished within a month. It will take time, but we have to go with steps. The families of the victims, we are not worried. The justice will come.
Speaking to reporters in Khartoum yesterday, Sudan's Attorney General Tajassir Al-Hibir vowed to prosecute all those who attacked protesters with force. Speaking in Arabic, Al-Hibir says all the country's legal agencies are working together to leave immunity for top officials accused of orchestrating the violence before they appear in the court. Al-Hibir says the government has arrested and detained more than 50 members of the previous regime, including Bashir. He says anyone found guilty of crimes committed against the protesters will not go unpunished. For VOA News, I am Michael Atiit in Khartoum.
Opposition politicians in Africa face tough challenges, including arrest, intimidation, and violence, as they struggle to upend decades of rule by the parties that originally brought liberation from colonialism. But their struggle, they say, is not only an African movement, it's a global, generational shift towards accountability and a departure from authoritarian leadership. VOA's Anita Powell met with two of the continent's most vocal opposition leaders and reports from Johannesburg.
Being in the political opposition means speaking out against larger forces. But in Africa, it can also mean intimidation, arrest, and violence. This year, longtime ruling parties clinched presidential victories, again, in Botswana, Mozambique, Namibia, Senegal, and South Africa. South African opposition politician Musi Maimane says he fears African regimes are becoming bolder and more dangerous.
The incarcerations that are taking place of opposition leaders, the violence that is taking place is a deep concern. We're finding that it cannot be that you live in a continent where the leader of opposition in Tanzania is shot just for standing up for something. It cannot be that when you go to Zimbabwe, that in fact members of parliament from the opposition are being kicked out of their country.
That is something that Uganda's Bobby Wine, a musician turned opposition MP, knows all too well. He is running for president against Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power since 1986. And it has been a tough road, paved with intimidation, arrests, and bans on his concerts. Wine says he has trouble even talking to voters in his quest to win the 2021 election.
I cannot be allowed to engage, to interact freely with the public. I'm a member of parliament who cannot be allowed to address his constituents.
Maimane says it is difficult for the continent to split from the powerful ruling parties that often led the battles to throw off former colonial masters.
First, you must be liberated, and then soon after that, you must liberate yourself from the liberators.
And Wine says he's hopeful, but also cynical about how that will go for him.
And we believe we're going to win massively. However, we also suspect that he's going to try to usurp the voice of the people. And my own prediction is that if President Museveni rigs the election right now, the people of Uganda will rise up against him.
Even when elections are fair, opposition parties face a challenge. Maimane's Democratic Alliance won a disappointing 21% in South Africa's recent election, losing to the long-ruling African National Congress. But he says the struggle is bigger than one party or one country.
I think what has become true is that institutional politics is being disrupted all over the world. I think we must realize that the struggle that we're engaged with is generational, but not only that, it must move beyond politics.
The times, along with Africa's demographics, are rapidly changing. And it's time, opposition politicians say, that governments do the same. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
For the first time, the World Health Organization says the number of men smoking around the world has dropped, indicating measures to end the global tobacco epidemic are paying off. Lisa Schlein has this report from Geneva.
World Health Organization officials call this a major shift in the fight against tobacco, which every year kills more than 8 million people prematurely. Data from 143 countries shows a decline in tobacco use for the first time among men, following a steady rise in the use of this deadly product during the past two decades. During this period, WHO reports 60 million of the world's nearly 1.4 billion smokers have quit the habit. Most of these reductions have been driven by women. However, WHO's Director of Health Promotion, Rudiger Kretsch, says male use of tobacco over the same period has risen by about 40 million.
But now we are seeing for the first time a decline in use, with WHO projecting that there will be at least 2 million fewer males using tobacco in 2020 and 5 million less by 2025. Fewer males using tobacco products means fewer people will suffer the avoidable pain and death that they cause.
Kretsch says the decline in tobacco use shows tobacco control measures work. He says steps such as taxation, banning advertising and marketing, as well as smoking in public places and plain packaging of tobacco products, discourage people from smoking. The report finds approximately 43 million children aged 13 to 15 smoke, with boys using tobacco at twice the rate as girls. It says Southeast Asia has the highest rates of tobacco use, while sub-Saharan Africa has the lowest. WHO says most gains in reducing tobacco use have been made in low- and middle-income countries. While the Americas is the world's best-performing region, it says the European region has the slowest pace of decline in tobacco consumption. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Barani dungangwa turonyo, erisi limoro ersongangwe, animangi he aurukoto sende.
That is our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Barani by Colonel Mido.
Movrani shigani engapaye, wanovwe oguyo, nengapaye kuchrani, kamungbe angafrane batayo. Sa asadaya unu motukrani. Chekwe barapaye, chipali mungbe gangamwe. Natandwe, natalimwe, yaye kinzi. Amina.
Listening to Colonel Mido, a little bit of a Middle East, with the song Barani. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Mangwa turonyo e barani dumwa
mangba turonyo e. Ensi limono, ensi ngangba.